The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small caps. So big welcome, Paul, from sunny Gozo, I believe.
Yes, absolutely. I'm working remotely. Hello, Paul, and hello, everyone at home. Good to be with you.
Yeah, well, it's been another jam-packed fortnight on the corporate results as we've all head into those interim results for small cap land. We've had a fair string of profit warnings, unfortunately. So maybe we could start there. Anything which has sort of particularly caught your eye over the past couple of weeks?
Well, with the individual stocks, we'll go through them all, I'm sure. But yeah, you say we've had quite a flurry of profit warnings over the last fortnight, mainly company specific, I'd say, but standout sectors that are struggling, marketing. We've had a number of marketing companies issue profit downgrades, building products and house building doesn't really seem to be any sign of recovery yet. In terms of individual stocks, I had to raise some cash, so I sold my JD Sports, but my view on the company hasn't changed. And obviously, as soon as I sold it, it went up 10%. So, and I've averaged down. I bought some more Spectra Systems yesterday, and I think I might have mentioned before, but I've taken an opening stake in PCI Pal after our quite interesting chat that we reported on a couple of weeks ago. I've dipped my toe in there. So how about you? Anything going on your side, Paul?
Just on JD Sports, et cetera. Obviously, we had Nike coming out with a good profit upgrade, actually. And so that's helped the likes of Zotefoams and JD Sports. But the one question I would have, actually, which I didn't realise about JD Sports, it's got quite a lot of, they call it put and call option liabilities.
Oh, yes. Yes,
what,
it does.
What is that? Is that basically that deferred consideration for past acquisitions? Because it's about £1 billion.
They're big numbers on the balance sheet. Do you know what, Paul? I can't remember. I'm really sorry. I looked into it a few years back, but I just can't remember off the top of my head. It's a nuisance because I don't like things like that on the balance sheet. I don't think it's a concern. If it was, I would have kept it, you know, as a key thing to look at. But yeah, I think it's effectively something to do with deferred consideration for the major acquisitions, but I can't remember the detail, I'm afraid. Sorry about that.
That's all right, yeah. And then just on PCI Pal, I mean, just for investors here, people, just a reminder, they basically do secure payments that go into call centers. They compete against Echo, who were bought out by private equity, and I think Securio or something like that. One of them. So it's about what they're one of three of the big guys who do these secure payments. The question is that now you do, because I know we spoke to the CEO and he was quite bullish in terms of the longevity of costs of contact centers, you know, call centers, etc., be able to take payments. But there has just been this week a massive announcement from OpenAI that it's having a partnership to do agentic purchasing. So just to give you an example, if you wanted to buy anything, whether it was sneakers, insurance, telephone, you put it into AI and then it has partnerships to then do all the payments off the payment rails and will suggest to you whatever you want. So if you wanted to say, give me the best, I don't know, Nike, give them the best trainers under £100, or give me the best telecom deal that sorts for my house, which is, you know, most economic, etc. It would come out with one particular answer. Is that a potential danger to the payment rails of PCI Pal going forward?
Oh, I've got no idea, Paul. I mean, the thing I did like about the discussion we had with the CEO at PCI Pal is it's not just call centers, as you said. It's now they're calling it contact centers, and PCI Pal software is being now linked into these chatbots, you know, and it's got a lot of fraud prevention stuff that's coming through. So it's not, I got the impression it wasn't a dated technology as such, not just linked to telephone call centers, that it's, you know, that they seem to be moving with the times. I mean, was that your impression too or not?
I think it covers all types of payment. It's just, it's where the interface occurs, because if you're a consumer, then you're going to use a contact center where you need, you know, you ring them up, or you basically, you're serviced by a chatbot online. So there's not a problem with that, but it's just how you do it. Because obviously to get the recommendation or just to get your choice, that tends to be, I mean, for instance, it might impact more moneysupermarket.com and the other price comparison websites. I mean, I'd highlight, I'd highlight to investors, if you own Future or you own Money Supermarket or Money or even this one, just have a good look at that agentic payment option now being set up by OpenAI. Because if that becomes a standard through Gemini, through OpenAI, through Anthropic, whereby it becomes the go-to place that you just ask a question and it saves you like 5 hours deciding what insurance you're going to buy, what car, you know, for the car, or what telecoms deal you're going to get. And it comes out with something you can trust, then essentially, it'll be a no-brainer for people like me for convenience.
Yeah, it could be. I think all these things are worth monitoring, aren't they? I mean, the main thing for me with PCI Pal is they're achieving 20% ARR growth. Now, that is very unusual, and that, you know, tells you whatever they're doing is working. And it should, you know, they were distracted by the big legal action, which they won, of course. Mm. And now management are saying, look, they're just focused back on the business fully. They're getting this acceleration in ARR. And the shares, I think, should re-rate if they can keep that growth rate going. So I think it probably could be worth double to triple the current market cap if the 20% ARR continues, which they're saying it will do. They've got a 5-year plan on it. Should re-rate considerably, I think. But I appreciate some existing holders are a bit stale because it has been quite a slow burn at PCI Pal. But that's why it's cheap.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would agree. I think from 50p, if it actually does what it says it will do, it'll be 150 in about 2 years, no doubt about it. Got a question coming in from Andrew Kay. He's asked, just related, actually. He's asking about Wise with the payment company. And he says, basically, that's been weak over the past couple of weeks. And I would just point, Wise to that OpenAI agentic payments platform they're creating, because it's done with Stripe, not either PayPal or Wise or Block. And what that means is that Stripe is becoming the de facto standard that OpenAI are adopting. And if you think you've got over 100 million users on it are going to agentic payments, then that could take volume away from the likes of Wise, PayPal, and for Block. So I would highlight on that one. I don't know whether you've got any thoughts on that at all, Paul.
I haven't looked at Wise since July. That was the Q1 trading update. We do think it's interesting, mainly for the reasons that were explained on one of your fund manager in interviews, where they're adopting this sort of Amazon approach of just pushing the transaction costs and the amount they charge customers down and down and down and down until it almost gets to zero. Or actually, I think they may be targeting zero and just make money on the float, which is a very aggressive strategy. So I think it looks interesting. I don't currently hold because I just don't know enough about the payment sector. But Stripe, funnily enough, is used by Substack. So I receive my payments.
Oh, wow.
Payments from all my subscribers on my Substack come to me every day through Stripe. And the platform is very good, I find.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, good. Now, just got a follow-up, actually, on Andrew Kay, relating to the other one you've bought. He's asking about any thoughts on Spectra Systems, because unfortunately, I think they had a bit of a veiled profit warning, didn't they? Do you want to take us through your latest thoughts and why you've just added to your position on Spectra?
Yeah, it's basically, obviously it's disappointing, and it's disappointing in the way they handled it. And too many companies are doing this at the moment. And one of my readers said to me, I should invent a new category and put this against the name of companies that put out an inline, I'm not going to use steaming turd, I'll use something
good,
else.
Good.
something a bit nicer. So maybe somebody frowning or something like that. But anyway, we're going to do this because I think companies should be named and shamed, where they put out an inline, perky sounding update, which is precisely what Spectra did. And fair enough, they're having a cracking year in 2025. But then they said nothing about the outlook for 2026. But the brokers slipped through a 34% downgrade because of two large contract delays. Now, that is really bad, which was not mentioned in the RNS, the interim results. So basically, people who were buying first thing on these fantastic H1 results had been mugged. They'd been done over because they hadn't looked at the broker notes. Thankfully, on my Substack, me and the team always check the broker notes before 8 a.m. So we actually flagged to our readers at 10 to 8, hang on, hold your horses, this is a profit warning for 2026.
Well done,
We saved people a lot of money because you could sell at the open pretty much flat or even slightly up. And then this is a terribly wrong thing. We've had four or five companies do this, so we're going to nail it. Me and my team are going to name and shame companies doing this. However, with Spectra, yes, it's a big disappointment. Shares dropped 20-odd% on the day, which was correct. They should have done. However, I joined a call arranged by the broker with management yesterday, and they gave a little bit more color around these contract delays. And basically, it's totally out of their hands. This is a business that does very large, lumpy contracts with central banks and the like, and just doesn't have control over the timing of these contracts. So it's the classic case of two really quite big contracts that they thought were nailed on, that's why they put them in the forecast, have now shifted to the right quite considerably through to totally unknown factors that only recently just popped up, unforeseen.
Are they currency sensor contracts, like this big one they've got one about for $30 million they're just doing at the moment, aren't they?
They've got a huge one at the moment. That's why the figures are so good this year. Yeah, and it's massive margins on all their activities, but they've got three other different types of activities. So one of the contracts that was deferred, I think, was something to do with security stamps, you know, for various products. That was pushed to the right.
One was the Middle East, wasn't it? The Middle East?
Well, yeah, that was it. Polymers, yeah. For the banknotes are printed on. Spectra has very advanced. You'll probably know more about the technology than me, but basically it's a world leader and a big, big innovator. So you're getting, I think, a fabulous business for sub 100 million market cap. It's going to be awash with cash next year when the central bank contract pays out. Although that obviously is a potential risk, whereas they're telling us that they've got very high conviction that cash flow will come in. And it's to be fair to Spectra, it's more than 10 bagged in 10 years. It's been a phenomenal cup success story. It's paid very generous dividends as well. This is kind of the first time they've really put a foot wrong. So I'm inclined to give it the benefit of the doubt. And so I bought more. I think this is a buying opportunity. But as always, that could be wrong. But that's my calm, sort of rational assessment of it. It's not, you don't have emotions coming into this. You just look at the figures, the revised forecast, and where it's best to sleep on it. Wait 24 hours for the anger to subside, and just look at it rationally. To me, it's either get rid of them or buy more.
The word you might want to use is steaming ears, because it steam's coming out your ears for this category rather than steaming.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. Yeah.
just on, I mean, obviously they do all things sort of technology associated with banknotes or stamps or whatever. Are those physical assets? To me, it seems a bit of a melting iceberg, a bit like, you know, physical, I don't know, newspaper or isn't, you know, basically, you know what, I know they're effectively polymers now, aren't they, rather than actual paper, but currency seems to be going out of fashion, essentially. Does in the West anyway.
The usage of it is still very high and growing, and different countries, you know, still use cash a lot more than we do in the UK. I think it's a mistake to think about us all using our cards in the UK and assume the rest of the world's the same, as it isn't. So yeah, no, I mean, it's still a very, very active area, not a declining area. And it's constantly a cat and mouse game between counterfeiters and central banks. So no, I mean, Spectra Systems is very much alive and well. And they've also got this mobile phone software, security software that's done really well. And they've got some really interesting new innovations as well, which is all in the RNS for security printing on standard paper, which is a gigantic market, and they've got some really interesting innovations there. So you're getting a whole basket of lottery tickets almost, but on top of an incredibly cash generative but large lumpy contracts. You can't get away from that. It's the nature of the business, and investors just have to accept that. Yeah, there'll be the odd delay that's outside of their control. It's just the way the business is.
Okay, good. We've got a question from Drew. He's asking about Alico. Now, we chatted about Alico 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
So what I would suggest is, Drew, is have a look at that video from a fortnight, and I think we covered it all in detail there to a certain extent. We've got a question from Vicky. She's asking about Water Intelligence, which basically does all things leak detection out in the States, about 90% of the business on a franchise. They sort of like identify – I own the shares as a – you know, as a disclosure, they basically detect a particular leak in a house or in a swimming pool, repair it, and also do preventative maintenance. And we've got this big partnership. But then what you had, they came out with half year results, which were in line with full year numbers. And they had a really big pickup actually in the second quarter. Don't what your views were on the business. It's pretty cheap actually.
Yeah, it's looking better value now, isn't it? We looked at these on Monday. I've just been finding my notes while you've been speaking. Monday, 29th of September, it put out H1 results. Yeah, we thought maybe these were good. It looks cheapish. I've put here on low PE. Do have slight balance sheet concerns. The balance sheet, if you look at the balance sheet each year over the last 4 or 5 years, every year debt goes up and net tangible asset value goes down. And it's now minus $15 million net tangible asset value. So just a little bit of an amber flag on the balance sheet. I don't think it's a crisis, so that wouldn't put me off. In line results for H1. Outlook comments were a bit vague. They could have been a bit more specific on that. But adjusted profit, revenue and EPS all up 8% in H1. So we thought these were pretty respectable numbers, actually, Paul. Were you pleased?
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually. I actually spoke to the guys afterwards, and the things which stood out to me was one, they're basically longer term. They're planning. They've got this sort of rollout strategy of the Dallas template, which they bought last year across the whole of their franchise, the 45 bases, and they reckon they can do another 2% pretty straightforwardly EBITDA margin increase, which will over $2 million. PBT. That could be in the next 12 months just by doing it. And they're already demonstrating it through their Dallas facility anyway. The CEO of American Leak Detection is excellent, that Will Nell guy. And then Patrick D'Souza, the CEO, he said to me, because they've just inked this partnership with Streamlabs, which do these sort of like remote center leak detection and sort of like not only detect leaks, but they can actually shut your stopcock off and give you, you know, preventative maintenance data. They've done this with Chubb, which is the biggest insurer in the States. They own Streamlabs. And they reckon, because they're just selling to their existing base this preventative maintenance service, they reckon they can double their turnover in 5 years. And if they get anywhere near that, they will absolutely annihilate the broker forecast, which is like 8%, you know, growth. They'll do double digit. They'll be doing, you know, teens type growth going forward on their top line, never mind the operating leverage they're going to get. So if they get anywhere near to what, you know, they implied to me, as a holder, I think this could do really, really well. My valuation is £4.70. I can accord on £5, but I do think these forecasts are actually pretty light. Not so much this year because they had a slower first quarter, but certainly 2026, 2027, 2028. And they've got this flywheel approach whereby the reason why they're buying their franchisees is basically because they got more control then of doing the Dallas model, of standardizing the service delivery, accelerating the growth, and then inking these national deals with the large insurers out there. And as Patrick said to me, this is a worldwide phenomenon of leaky pipes and water preservation, rising costs of water, climate change. Sure. So that this is there's no reason. They're just they've spent a lot of money investing in their platform that they're going to roll out to the UK, to Ireland, to Australia, to New Zealand, to Canada. And there's no reason why, if they get another bridge into Europe, they don't do it in that as well. So, yeah, you know, I think it's a sleeping, it's something to put on your watch list anyway.
Yeah, I think that all sounds interesting. I mean, you can see from the chart just how much it's one of these small caps just been going down and down and down and down. But look at my notes here. Certainly this year, every update's been in line. There's nothing I think in the past it did get overvalued. It was in a PE over 20. We are now looking at a PE of about 8 or 9. So I think actually this could be quite an interesting point in valuation terms to actually look at this one. It looks quite attractive. I did mention earlier this year looking into the possibility of listing the shares on the American markets, but I'm wondering if it might be a little bit too small for that.
Yeah, I think it will be. I would say.
£50 million pounds market cap is too small for the US markets, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, just to give you an indication, in Q1, just as they did basically, because it was going into the Trump trade tariffs, nobody was doing anything. They did 4% growth top line, but essentially they did 12% in the Q2, you know, growth. And I asked Patrick this. Anyway, the Q3 started off strong. Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. But there's no way I'm selling those for sure. So.
No, I wouldn't. I think it looks quite good, Paul. So I think you should. Yeah. Hopefully, fingers crossed, you could do all right on that.
Okay, we got Pete. We got Peter T. He's asking about Tate and Lyle. Bad profit warning. I cannot believe how much the shares have fallen on this. And I spoke to Christopher Mills of Harwood Capital about 2 months ago, and this was one of his top plays as a sort of mid cap going forward. So I think what you've made of it, that basically it's a high, as people know, it's a high value food ingredients business that has just made an acquisition last year of CP Kelco, which gives sort of like ingredients into mouthfeel and adds taste. It looks very, very cheap. What's your take on it?
I don't think it does look cheap, actually. I mean, we had this one warned on profits yesterday, and we worked out it looked like it was about, slight beat on the March. No, sorry. Sorry, Paul. I'm looking at the wrong numbers.
It was a slight profit warning. They reduced down there. I think they said their revenues were going to decline by low single digits, like for like. And their EBITDA would decline full on year by about high single digits, like for like.
Yeah, I found it. Sorry, Paul. I misspoke there. Yeah, H1 trading update. This was Wednesday, so yesterday, shares dropped about 10%, might have been 13% by the close, actually, 2 billion market cap, slowdown in its markets. My colleague John looked at the consensus forecast and compared it with the guidance. He reckons it's about a 20% miss, and the shares dropping about 13% is kind of in that right sort of ballpark. We do have concerns about debt at Tate & Lyle. Bear in mind, it's about 2.2 times EBITDA, which is a little bit on the warm side. And the big recent acquisition that you mentioned, CP Kelco. When you take into account the debt, we don't think it's that cheap, actually, particularly when you factor in a 20% odd reduction in the forecast. So we couldn't get above neutral on this. Right. We're just neutral.
It trades on about just over 6 times EBITDA, and these things go for like 12 to 14 times EBITDA.
Okay. I mean, it's capital intensive though, Paul, so you'll have a very large depreciation charge and probably ongoing maintenance capex. Yeah. But that's a fair point. It didn't grab me. It's obviously not something I've looked into in massive detail, but didn't grab me. But I'm not negative either. Overall, I'm just neutral on taking.
Well, I would. Yeah, no, I am definitely. What I'd say, Peter, is that if it's food ingredients, this should have pricing power, and it should be an inflation play, if nothing else, okay, inflation protected, because food price inflation is 4 or 5% around the world. This has really quite strong niches in its food additives, and that CP Kelco acquisition is actually working. It's just that it's a soft market at the moment. Paul raises the only real hair on it, which is the debt, and it is a bit warm. 2.2 times, it doesn't give it much wiggle room if there is a problem. However, yeah, it's got pretty much dependable earnings. It won't collapse because it's food and food additives. And I think if their rationale for buying this actually works, you'll get back to 10 times EBITDA as a, you know, basically as a standard valuation. You could easily see 40, 50% upside, no problem at all, if they get that integration and the debt doesn't become a problem. The market is currently focusing on that debt problem, I think.
Also, a couple of other things. You've got a yield, projected yield of over 5%, which is pretty good if it, assuming that's maintained. And just looking at the history of the broker forecast, they have been, I mean, just constantly in a decline for about the last 18 months. So yeah, this wasn't a kind of out of the blue profit warning. There seems to be some problem there with this almost continual reduction in EPS forecast from about 65p. 2 years ago, down to about, 46, 47p now. So I'd want to drill into something seems to be mildly going wrong there. So I think more detailed research will maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the margins are pretty good. I mean, even on a, you know, down year, 14% EBIT margins. I mean, it's not unprofitable.
Pretty good, pretty good.
On a down year. I mean, hey, but let's be clear about it. Treat hasn't exactly excelled itself, has it? Actually, let's cover
Treat. No, Tate and Lahm.
No, I know. Let's cover Treat, because I just said we've got a question. We've got some questions on that, and it's on the same area, food ingredients.
Yes.
What's your latest thoughts there? We just had Dola, a rival, buying 10% of the shares in the market at £2.85. And the offer from Natara is at £2.60. Natara have got to submit their scheme document for the acquisition by Monday at 5 o'clock. Otherwise, they're going to have to ask the takeover panel for an extension. What's your view?
Well, this is interesting, because we did flag, didn't we, a week or two ago about Dola appearing, and you mentioned an Israeli company as well. That was so everybody's looking very carefully at the shareholder register of Treat. Well, Dola announced they bought increased to 10%, as you say, paying a premium, and they said they're going to be supportive of management, and it's an investment that they're not looking to bid. But of course, I think within the takeover panel rules, if somebody else bids, they're probably allowed to if they want to. So I wouldn't necessarily rely on that. I think we had interesting comment today from Richard Staveley at Rockwood Strategic. They put out an update and they said they considered the takeover bid derisory. And they're right. It is derisory. It's terrible that management recommended this lowball bid. So, yeah, I think it's an absolute... I think it'd be scandalous if it gets taken out at 260. So almost certainly going to be a higher bid, but still taking away people's recovery potential. So I think it'd be such a shame if Treat gets taken out. Your view, Paul, do you still hold?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, no, I think this one's going to go higher. I mean, my instinct is saying, okay, they're going to put the scheme document out on Monday, okay? And I would not be surprised if actually they reach agreement to go at £3 rather than actually at 260.
Yes.
To try and get this over the line. But if Natara will either pull out, I think, on Monday, or alternatively go higher, because they know Dola are not going to accept anything less than, 285 is what they bought. And they probably want to block anything less than £3. So on that basis, Natara need to probably put a three in front of the bid and change that scheme document, and hope that effectively Dola don't go over the top. But we'll wait and see. I think we'll come to a bit of a head actually on Monday.
Yeah, it's a very interesting one. And as we've discussed this stock a lot, as we've mentioned before, it's not financially distressed. It's got a fabulous balance sheet with negligible debt. So even if the bid falls through, it doesn't really matter. I think you're just maybe, a lousy bid premium. Why take it? I think if the bid falls through, this probably only drops marginally, £2.50, £2.40, something like that. So I would say risk reward is mainly, if you think more medium and long term like we tend to, I think sort of fingers crossed that this low ball bid fails. And even £3 would be far too cheap, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you. Yeah. Probably Lord Lee agrees as well. I don't know. But
I think he's kind of got, I did a podcast with him recently. It was very interesting. He's raving about Goodwin. And on Treat, I think he's kind of, just wants to move on.
No, I know the film. Okay, good. We got Stuart. He's asking quickly about Ixico, which basically does it's a little company that does sort of analysis of brain scans, MRIs for neurodegenerative diseases. And he's asking me the latest thoughts. And I guess it's probably related to there was some big news about Huntington's disease on last week. And the reason why this is so applicable is Ixico owns about, I think it's about 80% market share of Huntington disease scan analysis worldwide. Oh, and this new therapy, which is the first one, I mean, Huntington's disease, just for everybody, is an awful condition. It's a combination of sort of like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and it's just is like, and it's terrible, cystic fibrosis. It's an awful one disease. I know actually of somebody who's got it. And the quality of lifestyle. But anyway, it looks as though there's a cure now, which has just been found using gene therapy, Unicor, I think they're called. And I think the reason why Stuart's asking about it, the Ixico platform was used in the trials to develop that drug and get it through approvals. So what does that mean for Ixico? Clearly it's going to help them in terms, it's a great endorsement of how their technology works, and they'll remain the de facto standard for the treatments into Huntington's and give them a chance, presumably, and give them, you know, even more credibility in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. I don't know if you read it. You saw that one at all about the part?
I did. My friend John, who's out in Malta, actually, I saw him recently. He was raving about this, saying there was something very significant that it had been involved in. So I think there is quite an interesting story developing here. It's very small. It's subscale. Yeah. That's the only trouble. I think didn't it raise some fresh cash not that long ago? So I think it's okay for cash.
Yes.
I think it's a bit too small and illiquid. I have held this share in the past, but I'm not planning on revisiting. You had quite a chunky position this, didn't you, Paul? Did you?
I didn't have a chunky position. It's too small for me. But I bought it, and then I sort of like de-risked at a lower level than this. Unfortunately, at about 6 months ago, when I had the Argentex blowout, I just wanted to take some risk out of my portfolio because I was mentally scarred.
Oh no, I don't blame you.
But anyway, that was.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, you know, it's got a history of making profit some years, but it's a little bit erratic. So it's not a blue sky Jan Tomorrow thing. It's a proper little company.
Yeah,
could be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Fantastic. Okay. We've got Alan. He's asking about your conversation you had with Animal Care this week. Was it or something? Was
oh
it,
yes. Yeah.
Did they come out with results this week?
I think they did. Yeah. Do you know? Look at so many companies.
These guys, just for the interest for the audience, these guys do sort of like veterinary drugs. They distribute third parties, but also have got a portfolio of their own. And they made a big acquisition, I think, in Australia, Ran Labs, which is going very well. And they've got a sort of like a high potential product R&D strategy. And I think Christopher Mills loves these guys as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I'm remembering it now. I get invited to do on results sort of cycle. I often get PRs saying to me, do you want 15 minutes with this or that company? I'm sure you do a lot. And sometimes you and I do more detailed chats, but I'm just doing these quick fire 15 minute things with quite a lot of companies. I like Animal Care. I've never really looked at it before, AMCR. Yeah. As you say, niche is profitable, very, very good results came out this week. And I think management, just to try and get a subjective feel for management, they're straightforward people, you know, that gave me straight answers to the questions. So it ticked that box for me. Are these just, you know, down-to-earth, hands-on management? I think, yes, they are. So I think they're backable. The crux of it is, the short version is, that the valuation now is reasonable for what they've currently got. And you've also got a pipeline of about five individual products, all of which they're saying could become bestsellers. So I like it, because I think you're getting the pipeline basically in for free, you know, and who doesn't like that? Lots of growth, they're saying. They're also going to do more acquisitions. They seem very good at acquisitions, actually. Rand Lab, I said to them, well, look, that was a hell of a risk, doing such a large acquisition relative to the size of your company. They blew their entire cash pile and went into debt for it. But they said, we knew it so well. We spent 2 years doing due diligence. We know the management really well. We know all the customers. So we knew exactly what we were buying. So I think that's pretty encouraging, you know, because I would trust them to do more acquisitions, given that rigorous, careful approach. And it was a retirement sale. I love retirement sales, because the vendor tends to be motivated by finding the right partner as well as getting the best price. So, I mean, I haven't bought any myself, I don't care, but it's certainly gone on to my sort of buy the dips if I happen to have a bit of spare cash lying around. I think it's quite good, yeah.
Yeah, no, I've looked at it. I've owned it actually in the past, and I've liked it. I think, yeah, I'm with you. I actually think, I mean, I wouldn't, it's difficult. You can get bullish and you can get slightly, you know, bearish, but I would say it's almost like a no brainer at these levels, because the valuation stands on itself on the existing business. And you're getting all the R&D pipeline for free. So,
yeah, that's what I liked about it. I think it's a nice each way bet. Pretty good, I think.
Good. We've got Sue. She's asking about MPAC, which is basically an automation solutions business that does high-speed packaging machinery out into the States. It got hit by the tariffs, which caused a slowdown in the healthcare and the food and beverage sector from buying new machines, because they weren't sure where they could put their manufacturing in. That order book is now stabilized on in Q3. And I was just wondering your thoughts on. I mean, I would say the two things that could work in its advantage this coming forward is the big, beautiful tax bill by Trump, which is now enacted. It was acted in July and now allows 100% accelerated capital allowances to build new factories, new production lines in America on the reshoring. And yesterday, the Trump administration signed a deal with Pfizer, which I own actually, to build factories, to have a 3-year deferment of tariffs on pharmaceuticals. So you're seeing AstraZeneca, GSK, Pfizer, Bristol Myers, all agreeing to buy like 50 billion. Pfizer's doing 70 billion of CapEx in America. And these guys, that's 50% of their business is healthcare, pharmaceuticals, packaging machines. So those two things. Anyway, in the round, what's your view on MPAC?
I think it's looking interesting, actually. I've flagged this in my podcast recently as a potential, as you say, turnaround because of this. You know, it makes sense to me that these production lines that MPAC builds that are quite high, big ticket items, aren't they?
I've
heard figures up to £10 million or dollars per production line. So I can understand why they had a bit of a profit warning, given all the tariff uncertainty.
Yeah.
But equally, as you say, it could flip back the other way, couldn't it? Now, the H1 results came out on 23rd of September. I wasn't terribly impressed. It was in line, H1 performance, but EPS was down 20%. But the trouble is, it was masked by big acquisitions. And so the organic reduction was quite substantial, actually. And the Q2 order intake, it said, was impacted by tariff uncertainty. So I don't think I've said here, no sign of a turnaround yet. And debt, of course, is a bit high because they geared up with hindsight, right at the wrong point. But I think it's potentially interesting. And it rose 7% on these H1 results. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's quite an interesting potential turnaround, actually, MPAC. Yeah, worth a closer look, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I, their order book has did stabilize in Q3 and is in line.
Did it?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. So it wasn't going down. It had stabilized. But the thing is what I, you know, it's difficult to know. It's a bit of a macro play. But if you were a big factory sort of like, you know, production guy in healthcare or in food and beverage, there's no chance you'd assign a purchase order on anything with automation and production lines in Q2 whilst you didn't know where the tariff sort of like angle going in. Now that you do, and you've got accelerated capital allowance, which has just been enacted by the big, beautiful tax bill in the States, and you've got people in the pharmaceuticals not putting like 100 million, they're putting 70-80 billion dollars each of them into production facilities over the next 3 years. I mean, it's going to decimate Ireland, unfortunately, I think, the production out there, but they're putting it into the States. I think they're going to have a fall. I think this headwind is going to turn into a tailwind quite quickly, and you'll see deferred orders come into, but who knows, we'll wait and see. I don't own the shares, but I would say it's come down on a temporary dip, and you could equally see these things move backwards. But who knows? Nothing's certain in this game.
It isn't, but I think that all sounds sensible, and I'm leaning in that direction myself. I think this could be a recovery. Although I would say on the order book, look at the organic figures, because I think they were down substantially. Remember, it made a big acquisition, and the order book, I think, is only flat once you include that. You know, they're not comparing like with like, so it's not out of the woods yet, but I think I like this the narrative you just run through, and I agree with it.
Good. Okay, we got Rebecca. She's asking about Czar, which apparently they do digital printing technology, printhead technology. They've been around for ages, and they've got some high tech, good technology that allows you to spray viscous paint onto things like onto shirts and stuff like this for printing wise. Anyway, what was your take on it? Then she says they've got basically had a bit of a tax bill, 3 to 4 million quid or something.
Yeah, they did. That was yesterday. They finessed it very well. They sort of buried the bad news with a bullish.
With a broken note.
No, they embellished it with a bullish sounding trading update. Well, why not? You know, I think it's interesting. I mean, I've made money on Czar in the past when it did the big, a huge multi-bagging move when it made the print heads for Chinese tile ceramic printers. But of course, it was a bit of a one-product company. It's been promising great new things on new products now for years. You know, that's my only. Rebecca and I were having an exchange about this last night on WhatsApp. She knows what I think. I think it could go either way. I don't have any way of determining whether these new products are going to work or not. So I think 100 million is maybe a bit steep at this stage, where it's basically only operating at break even. But if you believe the upside story, it could be very exciting. So don't know from me, but good luck to holders.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I would say, Rebecca, is that the Chinese with sort of like, you know, high technology, digital inkjet printing, they've been chasing this market, you know, for on their tails forever, and it's gone from ceramics, it's gone through from clothes and stuff like that. I just get the feeling as though they're not far behind. I could be totally wrong, and on that basis, you know, they're very good at copying people and selling it at below cost.
That's true. And I also think this is a crowded trade. It's very popular amongst my readers, and you know, that means you can get quite wild swings in price. So no strong view either way from me. I'm not against it in any way, but I can't see a clear enough upside on it to want to invest myself. But I hope it works out. We need to see people making a bit of money. It's good.
Yeah. Okay, good. We got Tony's asking about Avingtrans, which is basically a high performance sort of engineering in regulated industries. They basically do things like secure storage boxes from Sellafield, blastproof doors for HS2. They do pumps for the nuclear facilities and for energy. And they've also got this medical business that they've just, which I guess Tony's asking about, they've just recruited a guy who is the CEO of Intelligent Ultrasound to be the CEO of their medical division to help them get through the FDA approvals and to potentially spin off the business. Anyway, what's your take? They came out with their interims, I think, last week when I was away. Pretty good. What was your take anyway? The shares responded favorably.
Yeah, it was 24th of September. I've got the results for May 2025. I like this one. I mean, I've never really properly understood it. You've explained it a few times to me,
yeah,
that it's a sum of the parts thing because the loss-making bit pulls the overall numbers down. But for me, this is the first time the numbers have actually stacked up. I thought these results were very good. They looked ahead of expectations to me. EPS was up 28%. The order book was strong. It said Q1 trading, so that would be what, June, July, August was also in line. And the broker forecasts were raised 17% to 30 pence. That's for May 26. So now, at long last, the numbers stack up for me. I'm not having to make guesses or be optimistic. So for that reason, I try to just be rational on the facts, figures, and forecasts, not guessing what will happen in future. It now works for me. So I upped it from amber to amber green. So yeah, I like having trends. And I think management are very highly regarded from what I'm told. Net debt is below 1x, so that's all right. The outlook was a bit waffly. I think they could have been more specific on outlook. But I think now that we've got, you can clearly demonstrate this is good value on these upped forecasts. I think it's good. So yeah, I'm a bit late to the party, but that's because, you know, I just based my view on the numbers, and the numbers are now more attractive. So
the two guys actually they became the CFO and the CEO back in 2009 2010 when the shares were like 25-30p.
gosh,
they're nearly £5 now.
Amazing. Yeah.
They've stuck with it.
Do you know, I've been talking to some really successful investors recently, and they all have told me the same thing. They said, you find really, really good management, back them early on and do nothing. Just hold the shares for 10 years. Yes. And I think that's such a clever idea. I haven't got the discipline to do that myself, but in a way, that's kind of what you've done with some of your
big hopefully we'll wait and see. But what's also good about it is that talent attracts talent. And I actually know Stuart Gould from Intelligent Ultrasound, and he sold that business to a trade buyer at a pretty good price. And because he's in medical devices, he's the perfect guy to run that medical division, to do x-rays and the small form x-ray scanners or 3D small form x-ray scanners and the small form MRI scanners, to take that to market, to commercialize it, to give them optionality if it's going to be a float, you know, so they spin it off, they IPO it, or they eventually trade sale it. And they have to get obviously the FDA approvals, finalize those over the next couple of months. So I think it's, as I say, if you've got a very good management team, it's amazing how more, you know, very good quality people come towards those companies because they want to work with good people. Yeah,
that's a really nice point. And I mean, the thing I like most about having trends now is that you're not having to overpay for the potential. You know, the valuation now stacks up. It's reasonable. It's sensible. So you're getting the upside in for free. So I think it looks lovely.
Yeah. Okay. We've got Paul the Parrot. He's asking about Renew Holdings, which does, I think, essential sort of like services for railways and for nuclear facilities and stuff. They did actually have a profit warning, if I remember, about nine months ago because of CP7 delays on the rail network. I haven't looked at it since. What was your take anyway?
We've just reported on this recently. I can't find my notes on it. I think it was it even today, maybe?
I think it was today, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was. We like this. We think, I actually did buy some for Lynn's ISA, who I look after, almost immediately after the profit warning. People always say to me, don't buy on profit warnings. They come in threes and all this sort of thing. It's not true. I think everyone is different. And if it's something specific like this, a bit like with Spectra, if it's some sort of delay that's outside their control, that is a bit of a one-off and, you know, is fixable, those can be good buying opportunities, actually. And some of them do go straight back up again. And this is one we made a nice turn on Renew, actually, for Lynn. We made about a 20% profit buying after the after that profit warning. So I like it. We did sell. We sold off. I can't find my notes on it, Paul, but I think it was yesterday. They rose about 8%, I think.
Yes, that's right.
It's a good, oh yeah, I can see it from the chart there. It's good business. Yeah, we like this one. Lousy sector, but they've just, well, apart from that profit warning, they've not put, generally long term, they haven't put a foot wrong. So yeah, good business, I think. Very well.
Yeah, I would say I actually don't think it is a lousy sector. I think infrastructure in the UK is going to be an area that's got more and more investment. I mean, let's be clear about it. We need more nuclear facilities, we need better railways, we've got to build reservoirs, we've got new dense data centers coming in. And you need a good solid maintenance guy to come and service that properly on time. To make, particularly in regulated markets, and there's more becoming regulated. So true. I would say, actually, that's not a bad market to be in if you've got the number one position in the UK.
Yeah, that's a fair point, actually. If you could eke out a decent margin, the problem with a lot of these things are only getting 1%, 2%, which originally Renew only got 1%. They said we're going to get it up to 5%. I remember that years and years ago, about 15 years ago, 10 years, they said we're going to get it to 5%. And I thought, oh, of course you are. Well, they have. They've got it up to 5% and more. Funnily enough, I spoke briefly to a management team today at Hercules, H-E-R-C. They're in the same, very much smaller. They do staffing for infrastructure projects as well. So that's one to have a look at. They sounded, struck me as pretty hands-on entrepreneurs. So I quite like Hercules. Have a look at that one too.
Yeah, that's quite, it's a bit, you just say that's more of a sort of like a, it's a bums on seats, isn't it? It's sort of like just staffing blue collar people into infrastructure, isn't it?
Is it? Yes, it's, they also do training. They bought a training academy and they said, these vast, vast multi hundreds of billion infrastructure projects, they specialize entirely in that. And they said there just aren't enough trained people. So they've got their own academy. Yeah, okay. They train up the staff, but at this stage it's a bit low margin. But I think that's one to watch. I think Hercules.
No, good idea. Good idea. We've got Grant and Adrian DeMay both asking about HVivo. The shares actually have gone through a bit of a rebound a few months ago after a profit warning. They've started dropping again. Any thoughts on it? They've obviously got lump. These guys do the challenge trials in facilities in the UK. I know their CEO is excellent and has bought shares about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago on the profit warning. What's your take on it? As I say, it seems to be the share price seems to be dropping a bit.
It does. It's such a pity because I thought this, I mean, six months ago, this looked really good, didn't it?
Yeah.
Really good, high margin business. It's such a pity. It put out H1 results on the 23rd of September, so that's recent. I couldn't get excited about it because I just don't know where it's going. This is the trouble. I mean, bulls in the stock are saying, oh, it's a hiatus caused by the Trump regime and everything. It might be, but I don't know. So I just cannot value it. And with hindsight, obviously, they spent all this capex on new labs just at the right point, the wrong point in the cycle, unfortunately. Yeah. So it's actually trading at a loss now. You know, never mind EBITDA, PBT is now loss-making. The contracted order book shrunk 44% to only 40 million. And the cash pile, a lot of the cash is going or will go because, I mean, I have mentioned this in the past. It gets paid substantial deposits up front by customers. Well, that's great if you can keep the contracts rolling. But as I have warned in the past, you know, if the contracts dry up, the cash pile is going to disappear. And that's precisely what's happening. I think Cavendish slashed the forecast cash by a lot, by about two-thirds down. It's not in any danger, but for me, it just goes in my don't know tray. You know, you're looking at 7p now compared with a peak of 30p. You know, you think to yourself, it could be worth a punt, couldn't it?
I think it's they've got new facilities out there. It's great quality, you know, site they have. They have fantastic reputation across the industry for doing these challenge trials. When the US, and particularly that guy who's head of the health service, that Kennedy guy, realizes that actually vaccines save lives, because he's basically put a stop on a lot of development out in the States on vaccines and antivirals, which is HVivo's bread and butter business. And that's why you're getting that. But the science doesn't lie. I mean, let's be clear about it. We just come through a pandemic. The human race was saved by COVID vaccines, or millions of people were saved by COVID vaccines. Likewise with the flu vaccine, likewise with smallpox vaccine. These things work. They save lives. Yes, they may have a reaction like any drugs. But the moment that they, what effectively, I think he's quite puritanical, the Kennedy guy, and he's worried that actually by changing the DNA or by changing the, you know, the cells of particular, you know, individuals, is it storing something up? And I think he doesn't believe the science, which is unfortunately why you're seeing, you know, HVivo struggling, because rather than actually having the human race should be investing in vaccines. The science world around everywhere says that we should be, and the rest of the world outside Washington believes we should be. But because the most important guy controlling the biggest bat is against vaccines, it's just a temporary split. But when it comes back to buy, if you've got any idea on that crystal ball, Paul, when he's going to change his view, then that's the time to get in there, and the shares will do really well, because there's a huge backlog of work in vaccines and antivirals, right, which will be given the green light.
Yes, well, unfortunately, as my mother always says, the human race is going backwards in terms of our behavior and our intelligence, I'm afraid. So there we are.
Okay, good. We've got Kate. Let's move on to healthcare. Well, just stay in the same, but healthcare, consumer healthcare project. Kate, she's asking about a Venture Life group, which basically does consumer healthcare products in women's intimate health, and it does also treatments for him and hers for, you know, menopause, and which they bought. I think they bought. I think it was called Health and Hers for £10 million in November last year, and then they made this transformational disposal of their manufacturing business and non-core brands at €62 million to BioSure. What's your view anyway for Kate on Venture Life?
We had a look at this on the 30th of September. That was Tuesday this week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
H1 results, and it announced quite a substantial buyback as well.
Yes.
It was H1 results don't look much good, actually. A small loss. That's strange, but EPS went up 200%. Don't know why, but anyway, it didn't reflect the large disposal, I think. I think that happened after the year end. Buying back 10% of its shares. No clear guidance. We like the balance sheet, though. Cash is about half the market cap, I think, isn't it? That's as at September, so that must be post disposal. We think it looks interesting. It depends what they do with this cash pile, isn't it? But they've certainly demonstrated that they had some very interesting stuff within the group. That disposal was for us a huge amount, and a lot of us didn't even realize they had this labs thing or whatever within the group. So I'm a lot more positive of Venture Life than I used to be, that's for sure. So we're broadly positive on it. Amber Green. You like it, don't you?
Yeah, no, I've spoken to two fund managers about it. Lawrence Hulse from Onward Up, he owns it. And he was asking for more of the funds to be returned to the shareholders through the Star buyback. But also, I spoke to Nick and Christopher Mills about 2 months ago, and their price target on this, or they reckon just the existing business is worth 100p, you know, right, double okay. where it is, which actually is not too different from what I think Cavendish reckon as well. So they think there's lots of upside. But because these businesses tend to go for 12 times, 13 times EBITDA, and I was looking at Venture Life, and it trades at 9 times. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot to go on it.
More upside. Yeah, no, we quite like it too. So, yeah.
Okay, good. We've got a number of people who are asking about Capita. Because I think, the shares shot up or something?
Yes.
I didn't see any news. They're basically an outsourcing company for everybody.
Yeah, this was bizarre. We couldn't find any RNS, but what it was, Canaccord put out an extremely bullish note. I haven't read it, but because obviously being plankton, we don't get the notes. But apparently, the summary said that they'd put in a £9 price target. And that alone put 20% on the share price. Do you know what? We're seeing quite a lot of this at the moment. When you see, Berenberg up-rate so-and-so, it'll put 10% on the share prices. It's amazing how often quite large companies, share prices are moving a huge amount on broker upgrades. So that's something interesting to look at, because if you can get those on your newsfeed pre-8 a.m., that could give traders some targets to go for.
I think that is machine, actually. I think because it's happening so quickly, I don't think it's people. Because if you're people, you would have done it before, and it's just suddenly started. I'm with you. Somebody's written some algorithm. Which is stupid. It's just dumb money. But hey, it's making an impact on the shares, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And of course, you know, I think this is a profit takers market. I think when you see these 10, 20, 30% spikes up in shares, it's time to sell them, because they always come back down again, don't they? So Capita, in terms of the fundamentals, I'm just staying neutral on it. It's too big and unwieldy and complicated for me to be able to give any meaningful assessment of it. So neutral on Capita, but good luck to people. I hope it works well.
Yeah. Okay. Good. We've got Deborah. She's asking about a small company that just is called Facilities by ADF. It's basically we talked about it. A movie. It's basically a rental company that rents out trucks and trailers to the movie industry outside television broadcasting, and also has a tracks division for the ground called Auto Track. I think they came out with results, I think, a couple of days. I can't remember, a week ago or whatever. And they're going through a turnaround. They've had a new exec chairman put in, a guy called Russell Dan. What's your take on this one? I did actually touch base with Russell this week, so I can add to it.
Yeah, tell us a bit about that, because I think it's a crock. I just don't rate this at all. So,
oh, okay.
But over to you. Tell us what they said. Were you convinced?
Yes. Well, one thing which struck me, okay, is that the Russell Down is a ex-CFO for Hyder Consulting from a long time ago, and they sold that business to, I think it was Arcadis, a big one. So he made shareholders a shed load of money. This is probably 10 years ago. He then became the CFO for Speedy Hire, a rental company in the UK. So he knows this like the back of his hand.
Yeah.
And then became, for some years, became the CEO of Speedy Hire, where he got a very good reputation from Richard Staveley. Now, Richard Staveley works at Harwood now, and Harwood are a shareholder of ADF. They put some money in during their last fundraise. Before they did a profit warning last year. And when I spoke to Christopher Mills, he was literally steaming having put about 10 million quid in and then have this profit warning. So basically Russell's been brought in to turn around this business by Harwood because they really rate him. Now, the one thing when I spoke to him, I was on the phone for about, I don't know, I was Zoom for about 45 minutes. He is actually really hungry, even though he's done all what he has in the past, and he's the exec, you know, the chairman. He's actually really got the bit between his teeth to turn this one round. And his plan is back to basics. It's improving utilization, take out spare capacity. Where you have spare capacity, you've mothballed it, you sell the equipment outside of your market, get net book value, bring the cash down, and you reduce your capex. So it's actually generating a lot of cash at the moment because they're not spending on cash. The AutoTac business is doing really well, but there's overcapacity in the trucks and trailer industry for the movie theaters at the moment. And so what he's done with that is he's had to reduce his prices and effectively mothballs some of his equipment to improve it. But the reason why I asked him, because I thought he was a CFO that would kitchen sink the estimates, but he said no. You know, basically I've looked at the outlook, did look at the order book where it is in Q3, and we have good visibility for the rest of the year. So yes,
that's good.
It might have been tempting to do it, but he said, look, there was no cause for concern there. The cash position is fine, which is why we maintain the dividend. So actually things are recovering quite well, I think, in the outside broadcasting. And that might be part of, you know, that a really good summer. So outside broadcasting could have been, you know, pretty good. I don't know. But anyway, it's trading at the moment at, what is it? I did the numbers earlier on. Basically, you know, sort of like 10 times PE, but it's a very, very low PE, as like the E is very low at the moment.
Oh, I see. Yes. So it could shoot up or down. Yeah.
Yeah. So it comes, put it this way. My overall view is that it's out of the emergency room.
Okay.
And it's back on the ward, but it is not, it's not actually you know, sort of like hasn't done the turnaround yet. But the opportunities to build confidence, do make the forecasts, and then you'll see a re-rating next year. However, there's still, you know, a lot of wood to chop, would be my take.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me, funnily enough, of a stock called Snoozebox years ago, which had portable trucks for accommodation.
Yes.
For all sorts of things. And their massive problem was utilization and gaps in between. And I feel with ADF, it's probably very similar. I think they floated in boom time for the streaming companies making all these expensive productions, and that's just dried up now. So I think the outlook on it is more likely to be more sporadic utilization of the fleet, as you say, at lower prices. And I think they'll really struggle to make money personally. So I think to me, it's more fundamental. I think the business model was an opportunistic float at an overvaluation. And where we're at now, I suspect, I don't know for sure, but I suspect this is probably the new normal. So on that basis, I don't think it's worth bothering with myself.
And I would say, you know, if you put yourself into Christopher Mills's shoes at Harwood, given he can, you know, realize hidden value, it would not be surprised if things, you know, sort of like moved out for this year and they hit their numbers. He sells the original ADF business, gets money in, and concentrates on the track business, which is absolutely flying. So that would not be a crazy idea, because you concentrate on those assets that are making very strong double-digit return on capital employed and get out the market that you need more scale and more
possibly
pricing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be far too small on that basis to be a standalone company, though. But yeah, I mean, that acquisition of the track systems for festivals looked a very good deal. I remember looking up their accounts at Companies House, and it's fantastic margins on it, but tiny business. So you couldn't leave that as a listed vehicle, I don't think.
I'm not sure, because the market cap of facilities is 20 mil, and they bought the auto track for over 20 million. So I'm not
did
sure.
They
did, yeah. It was over 20 million quid, yeah. They raised 10 million or something.
I'll check that, because that sounds too... Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, if you've checked it, then you're right. Yeah,
I think so. Okay, good. Okay. Let's move to Frank. He's asking about PayPoint, which came out with... came out with a trading update. The shares shot up, didn't they, quite a lot this week? About 12%.
Yeah, this is we like this. We finally went up from amber green to green on this. Was John was nagging me, my co-writer, one of my co-writers. He really likes it. Yeah, it wasn't a trading update. It was a deal with the Czech Sphinx, who now owns Royal Mail, doesn't he? IDS. They've done a deal with PayPoint, which looked very good, actually. Mm-hmm. To a partnership deal, and PayPoint's received a significant 40-odd million to go into a JV with IDS, and they're giving it back as they're giving a 50p special dividend, PayPoint is. In context, it's about a £7.50 share price, so that's not bad, 6-7%. And they're doing, bizarrely, they're doing a 12-13 share consolidation, I think, to kind of remove the effect of the special dividend, which I've not seen any companies do that before. It seems a very strange thing to do, utterly pointless, but it's just trying to sort of smooth out the chart, I think. But they did say current trading was in line. You're looking at a PE of about 9. It's doing substantial buybacks as well as get nice divvies. We think it's a growth at reasonable price share, so we quite like it, PayPoint. Yeah, we're positive on this one.
Yeah, what's the management team like? Nick Wiles. I mean, he seems to be doing a terrific job.
Yeah,
I've never spoken to the guy, but he seems. Does he own a few of the shares?
I think I've no idea. Sorry on that front. Okay. But yeah, we think it has all the hallmarks of a company that's been pretty well run. Not the highest quality businesses, let's be honest. And obviously, the legacy payments business is the cash cow, and that you would expect to not have a particularly long life, but they're trying to buy and bolt on and develop all these other sort of activities. So I think probably my colleague John's more keen on it than I am, but our sort of house view, if you like, is positive. Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, we've got a couple of people asking. We've got Martin and Peter both asking about Card Factory. Which do you own?
Oh, yes.
I think you own Card Factory, don't you?
I do. It's one of my highest conviction individual holding. I think it's
fantastic. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I do. I mean, The interim results came out a couple of days ago, which were, they showed, I tell you what, the media is so ridiculous. One of the media outlets, the headline said, "Profits crash at card factory." And it was actually the quiet half of the year, H1.
Yeah.
I think profitability was down about 8% or something. But that doesn't really matter because H1 is neither here nor there. It's the full year outlook that matters, that includes Halloween and Christmas. And basically, because it's a January year end, basically it was fine. They said in line with expectations, we're going to have, I think, something between 5 and 10% earnings growth on last year. In line with expectations. And we had exactly the same thing last year and maybe the year before, when the market wobbled on the H1 results, thinking, oh, it's not going to hit the full year forecast. And of course it did. You've got management who really know what they're doing here. And so I think they will hit the full year forecast. And they get given good reasons as to why. And you're only paying something crazy, like a PE of about 6. The balance sheet's fine now. That's sorted out. Modest debt. And you're getting a dividend yield over 5%. And they've got the growth from funkypigeon.com, which they bought recently for an absolute steal. So I think this is, as I say, I'm such a high conviction value share for me personally.
Yeah.
And the market just hates it. Every rally, the market sells into it. I mean, look at the chart. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense to me. I think it's way too cheap. So
to play advocate, I mean, is there any risk for the Chinese guys or from, you know, the people moving away from physical cards? I mean, just to give you an indication, my wife used to send enormous quantities of Christmas cards, and she doesn't send any.
Oh yes, no, that's right. Christmas cards is gone. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
No, all the surveys and the whatever say that young people in particular are big senders. They like to physically hand a birthday card. And so, you know, greetings cards are alive and well, obviously huge margins on them. So, and the shops, it's a very profitable and cash generative business. Yeah. A lot of competition's fallen by the wayside. And now it's actually going to start challenging. I mean, look at Moonpig. If greetings cards were dead, why does Moonpig make so much money? You know,
I don't know. I mean, you're frozen there, Paul.
Yeah, sorry, my internet's just, is it back now?
It is, yeah, I know we can hear you.
Yeah, sorry, this is what happens out in Malta. It just drops for a second or two.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, basically, you've now got the online stuff as well. The valuation's just wrong. It shouldn't be a pound a share. It should be between £1.50 and £2. So,
Got a couple of quickies. We've got Peter T's asking about on the beach. He says, is the drop over done?
Yes, I think it is. I think it is. Yeah. We think it dropped too much on a predictable profit warning because Jet2 had already said that. So, yeah, we see that drop as a buying opportunity.
Okay, good. And then last one we had, where is it? It's Ondine Biomedical, and I can't remember who the guy is who was asking about it. I've not really looked. Yeah, Ondine Biomedical. Steve Lewis is asking about it. A couple of names.
What's the ticker, Paul?
I don't know. Is it?
Is it ONDI?
Well, the name is ONDINE, which I think based. Do they do these effectively? They do. They sterilize using ultraviolet places in hospital. Is that the one?
We did look at it 2nd of October today.
Today, okay.
Do you know, my mind's like a sieve. I just have hundreds of stocks going in one end and going out the other.
Yeah.
And it must have been in Alan's section. Let me have a quick.
The shares have done pretty well, actually.
Have they?
Alan
just mentioned it here. It's a 72 million market cap. Leading cardiac hospital, the Royal Papworth, is piloting SteriWave nasal photo disinfection.
That's it,
therapy. Ah, I did look at this a couple of days ago. This is the one, I think, where the CEO has a substantial holding. Nasal photo disinfection. This is interesting. It's Blue Sky, but have a look at it if you look at Blue Sky stuff. It might float your boat, actually, Paul. It does look a credible product. And I think it refinanced recently. The SteriWave thing, they reckon, reduces hospital infections by about 70%. Yeah. But it's kind of, it needs to be rolled out, you know. So, yeah, I think this, for people who like sort of Jam Tomorrow, Blue Sky type stocks, this one actually looks one of the more credible ones. So, yeah, have a look at it. and let me know what you think. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, great. Well, thanks again, Paul. We've been going at it for another 75 minutes.
It's amazing. The time just flies.
I know. We'll let you get to the bar and have a few pints.
You're
supposed to be on holiday, but I know you don't spend much.
I don't do holidays. They're for wimps.
Anyway, thanks, everyone, for your questions as well. Same time, same channel next week. So thanks again, guys.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Thanks, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.